Time to talk personal computers now with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us. If you're having a problem with your PC or maybe your software, give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Microsoft, as I mentioned, has a new system called Surface. Amazing thing. It's a computer designed like a table.
Yeah, the first reaction when it was announced, I remember listening to one of the news broadcasts on one of NBC's affiliates, and they were almost kind of like joking about it as a coffee table computer without really taking a look at it. They almost thought it was, kind of like going to be a joke kind of thing. And, it is pricey. It's probably in the $5,000 to $10,000, maybe $7,000 range. Mm-hmm. They don't expect it to come out until sometime the winter of this year. But it's about a 30-inch screen, and it's not really a touch screen. It's more of with sensors to acknowledge the presence of digital content providers. So, for example, a digital content device, not a provider, but a device, would be something like a cell phone. It could be mm-hmm. something like a digital camera. Could be a tablet PC. Could be anything that it can sense an interface with. For example, you put your camera on it, it would sense that obviously you've got pictures in it or new pictures, and brings the pictures on your screen.
So all you do is just turn the camera on and set it on the screen?
And maybe not even have to turn it on. It'll acknowledge it and turn it on for you. I don't know that part. Cell phone, putting your contacts there. If you're traveling and you had access to one of these, interactive content within, the city that you're in. If you're sitting in a restaurant, and the two of you, let's say there are two of you that are sitting there and you're choosing menu options and you're going to split the bill. So you pick your menu choice and drag it over to your credit card, and then, your friend does the same thing. So, you're just splitting your bill payment. it's surface.com, SURFACE.com. A lot of interactive content there for you to, take a look at and, kind of ponder how it could be used. So it's not this coffee table joke computer that some of these people are taking a look at it going, my God, what are we going to do with that thing? But probably my first thing was looking at the movie The Minority Report and seeing Cruise dragging these pictures around. And here we have, a real system that's going to be part of,
do that.
At some point in time, part of our society to actually do that. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Well, lots of callers online. Let's go to the phones. Wayne in Green Bay. Hello
yes.
to you.
Yes, good morning to both of you.
Hi.
Say, Pete, I'm having a trouble with the icon I can't open. I'll tell you what it is for my printer. I got a 1350 Hewlett Packard printer, okay?
Okay.
And the icon for the HP Gallery is fine, but the HP directory, I click on it, and the hourglass comes on too, but then nothing comes on the screen.
Okay.
Now, I do get a little message on there. It says location, and it gives a location, C, --, so on and so forth. I don't know if that means anything. But and by the way, I thought maybe I'll uninstall it, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I reinstalled it, which I did, and that didn't do it.
Okay. Can you remove the icon?
I didn't try on doing that. You think I should try that?
Well, when you uninstall, sometimes, if you don't have everything gone and it, it rewrites, you may still have something that's just, residual that's there from before.
Sure.
The other thing is when you have a desktop icon and you have problems with it, sometimes it tells you the link is bad. Sometimes the program has a problem and can't launch, and the system may or may not tell you that. The other option is to create an icon on your desktop. So if you right mouse click on your open desktop, and then you click on new and then shortcut, if you know the location of the program, you can browse to it on your system and see if you can find something that looks familiar to you. You know, there's usually these little pictures next to the programs, so you can maybe identify, you know, the file that's really associated with that icon and see if it, and try and, you know, create a new shortcut and see if it works that way.
Yeah. Give it a shot. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Mike in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call. I've been told that, well, my computer runs very slowly, and I've been told that I may have too many processes running.
Okay.
And so I go to Task Manager, and I, you know, I pull up that screen, and it says 42 processes running. Then it gives me the option to, you know, shut them off. And when I go to do that, a little thing comes up on the screen that says, "Do you really want to do this?" And
and sometimes, but you don't really want to do it.
Well, the thing is, I don't know what I'm doing, so I don't want to do it.
Right.
Yeah, understood.
Right. What kind of PC is it in terms of CPU, memory, RAM, hard drive space, operating system?
Jesus. it's a computer. It's a Gateway.
How long have you had it?
Oh, about 7 years.
Okay. Do you have any idea how much RAM you have in it, memory in the computer?
I supposedly around 500.
512 would probably be.
Yeah, 512.
Okay. Which operating system are you using?
It's Microsoft XP.
Okay. All right. Let's see. In order to figure out the stuff that you need running on your system and stuff that you don't need running, it sounds like you have a lot of little pictures in the lower right-hand side of your screen.
Yes.
When you start up. Okay.
No.
You have access to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay. If you go to my website, on my tips page, I have information on how to optimize the startup of your system.
Okay.
So if you scroll down through the tips, I think it's number 17, but I could be wrong. I don't have them all memorized, but look for Windows Startup. And in that paragraph for the tip, it'll have these numbers in bracket, number one in bracket, number two, all the way through five.
Okay.
Those are online resources that can help you define all the different things that you have running.
Okay.
But what you're basically going to do is to eliminate the ones that you don't really need. And those are the ones that are taking up a lot of your CPU time and memory in your computer, and can slow it down quite dramatically.
Okay.
So in order to make those changes, you'll have to learn. You'll have to pry around and search in those resources to understand what you have. But to get down to actually making the changes, what you do is you click on Start, click on Run, type in MSCONFIG.
Say that again.
MS, yeah, for Microsoft. So it's MSCONFIG. So it's short for configuration.
Okay.
And then you hit Enter, and it's going to bring up this series of tabs, and all the way to the right is a Startup tab. You'll have all these checkboxes, and there's probably a lot of them that are checked.
Okay.
And what you could do is you could uncheck all of them and then systematically put each one back and see what it does, you know, to mm-hmm. your system after it restarts. Because once you've checked or unchecked boxes in that startup tab, and you apply it and then okay and exit out, it'll come up and say, do you want to reboot now or do you want to reboot later?
Uh-huh.
So if you reboot now, it'll, you know, reboot your system, and whatever changes you made to those check boxes, it'll do for you.
Okay.
Now what I usually tell people to do is write, you know, you might want to write down which ones are checked off.
Uh-huh.
So that you could go back to your original configuration, you know, if you want to go back to ground zero.
Okay.
It's always good to make, you know, note of what you had before you made the changes.
In other words, if I screw it up, I can go back and fix it.
You can go back to the way you were.
Okay.
As if we didn't even have this conversation. So the other thing is, like I said, on that tips page where it talks about Windows Startup, those resources will help you understand what you need to have in there and what you don't.
Okay.
The other thing I can offer for you in terms of helping you speed up your computer is XP really likes to have 1 gig of memory. So look for a sale on memory and see if there you can expand your memory in your system. It's not absolute, but it's probably like 95% accurate. There's an application that I linked to on the Virus Info Center page under Utilities, and it's called Belarc, B-E-L-A-R-C, Advisor. Or you can go to Google and type in Belarc space Advisor, and you'll go to the link. You download that. And it's an application that will tell you everything you didn't want to really know about your computer, tell you about the CPU, tell you about the system board, the firmware, the RAM, the hard drive, the different licenses you have for your software, the different updates that you have, and the ones that you might be missing that it, you know, will tell you about, because it'll do a security check as well.
Okay.
All right.
So that'll help you understand, you know, whether or not you have an open slot or two for adding memory to your system.
Okay.
So that's why I directed you to that.
Oh, okay. And what is your website, sir?
It's infostar.com, infostar.com.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling.
Bye.
Bye.
Greg in Green Bay, you are next. Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. Hey. How you doing?
Great.
I got a minor inconvenience going on with my PC that I would probably not ever take it in to get it fixed or anything of that nature. But since I was driving and heard your program, I figured I'd call in.
Uh-oh.
It's not that big a deal. But whenever I start my PC, I've got a Dell home PC running XP. A couple months ago, I started getting a message that says, new hardware found. And I haven't installed any new hardware. I've got the same router, same mouse, same everything. So, you know, two questions. One is I go through the whole thing where I let it run and it comes up saying no new hardware found. Please insert the disk. I find I don't want to, you know, I down at the box it has a check mark that says if you don't want to see this message again, you know, click. So I click that box. Well, sure as heck, that thing comes back all the time. So that's one question is why does it come back after I've checked the box saying, you know, I don't want to see you anymore? And secondly is, how do I get rid of it asking me to look for this new hardware that I don't have new hardware on my PC?
Okay. Are you keeping your system current with Microsoft updates?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to rule that out.
Auto updates enabled, and don't ask me to, you know, I install them without asking me, and
right.
I do that.
Now, have you actually gone through to completion in terms of, you know, with finding the new hardware? Have you, followed through with it and tried to?
Yep, and it comes up saying, cannot find it. Please insert manufacturer's disk.
Does it give you an inkling of what it's trying to add to your system?
No. It doesn't. It doesn't say PCMCIA, or it doesn't say, you know, I know what you're getting towards. Does it say the router? You know, it doesn't identify anything. That's the conundrum I have.
And you haven't added like a new USB mouse or
no.
Flash drive or nothing hanging off.
Well,
of it.
I do have a flash drive that I've put in, you know, a USB that I put in probably once or twice in the past, or my wife maybe has.
Right.
So that might be the case, but. You know,
well, usually it acknowledges and it says something with USB or storage device.
Right. No, I don't see anything for that.
Boy.
And even at that, I mean, okay, if I restart my computer, if I don't have that flash or whatever new on there, why would it come up saying it found new hardware?
Right.
I have a Vonage router, I have a Netgear wireless router, and then I have my cable modem, and I have my mouse. That's the only four devices I've had since I've opened this thing up.
So, and it's asking you to continue on with adding the device. It never just acknowledges whatever device it is and says we're done with it. It wants to have you to keep installing it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There might be a feature, you know, I haven't done this, but there might be a feature in Windows where you can turn off for adding, you know, having it prompt you for adding new hardware unless, you know, you specifically
request it.
Any idea where that is?
But it's going to be in the control panel. It might be under system and device manager. And, you know, if you email me off of my website, I can do some checking for that. But I also do know that Microsoft does have some glitches with some of the, if you want to call them plug-and-play features of the operating system. For example, I know that a computer that's set up as a wireless connection and it has a hardwire Ethernet controller in it, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to see that icon telling me that it's not connected, and I tell it I want it to go away, and Microsoft insists that it needs to be there to tell me it's not connected.
Okay.
And there are options for you to tell tell the system, hey, you know, I don't, even though this is not connected, I don't want to see it, because I don't need to know about it, because I'm connected another way. But it continually insists upon telling me that it's not connected, one of two ways. So, there are some glitches. You know, what happened with your system? There might be some kind of timing issue with a device in your system that it's glitching, and it keeps hitting this point where it's saying, hey, I found new hardware, because there's some little timing issue that's off. But exactly what it is, you don't know until, you know, it says, what is it found?
So send an email to Peter.
Yep.
Yeah. The one that bothers me the most is, okay, I'll give it to you. Maybe you think there's new hardware. There isn't. But I told you I don't want to see this message again.
Yeah.
You asked me. You gave me that option to say, do you want to see this again? And I said, no, I don't. And then then you click finish.
Yep.
Still comes back.
That's not the only place it happens.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Greg. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And if your computer is working well enough to at least send an email, you could also email us at talk@wpr.org. So you can do that as well. Let's go to Ron in Arborvita next. Ron, hi to you.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. And I have an Acer about a year old, XP, and I'm using Mozilla and Thunderbird. And I'm having problems with when I turn the computer on and try to connect to Thunderbird or Mozilla. I push the button, and sometimes the hourglass will come up and then drop off, and then it hangs up, and I can't. The only way I can clear it is to disconnect the power.
What kind of internet access do you have?
Well, I use Mozilla and Thunderbird.
But I mean, what do you use?
Oh, I'm dial-up.
Dial-up.
Yeah.
Are you usually connected prior to launching the web browser?
No, I let the Thunderbird or the Mozilla dial up for me.
Okay. What it sounds like to me is it might. Are you sure you're connected, or are you just?
Oh, yeah. I should be connected. I haven't had any problem connecting. I have tried it sometimes when connect first and then.
Right.
Then do it, and I don't think I've had a hang up since doing it that way. But I don't know.
Do you have access to Internet Explorer? Correct.
Sure.
Do you try using that? Do you have any problems?
Yes, I have, and I did get a hang up with that once too.
Okay.
Taskmaster will come up and it'll say display not responding.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're having a problem with both web browsers?
Yes.
But yet. And you're trying to use your web browser to initiate the connection to the internet?
Yes. I don't get it all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll work fine, and sometimes it won't.
Okay. So does it come up and say page cannot be displayed, or is it just kind of...
No, it'll come up. The hourglass will come up like it's trying to connect, and mm-hmm. then... drops off, and if I went to the Taskmaster, it would say display not responding. Mm-hmm. I try to shut down from the Taskmaster, and it will not let me shut down or mm-hmm. restart.
In the lower right-hand corner of your screen, do you ever see two computers?
Yes.
Blinking lights? It looks like blinking lights.
Yeah,
like you're. And if you you click on that, does it tell you that you're connected?
No, it'll never connect. If I get a hang-up, it will not get to that point to connect, so I do not connect. It's before I connect.
What you may want to do, because, if you don't get connected to the Internet, usually the web browser, whether it's Mozilla or Internet Explorer, any of them, if you're not connected, then it'll usually tell you that the page can't be displayed.
Right.
But in your case, it sounds to me like you've got the hook in it to say, okay, I want to browse a page, so I need to have the Internet, the system dial up the Internet for mm-hmm. me, and then I'll connect. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, go ahead and do this before I do that.
Mm-hmm.
What you may want to try and do is dial up your Internet provider first and make the connection. And then try launching the web browser, whether it's Mozilla or Internet Explorer, and see if that helps. I've usually, because some of the systems, you said your system's about a year old.
Yeah.
Some of these systems are so fast, it's trying to launch this browser, which is a program, but yet it doesn't really have access to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it might be
just
spinning
too fast.
Too fast and spinning its wheels.
Yeah.
So what you can do is... I'm trying to remember how to do this, but in your system, there's probably for dial-up. I'm just trying to remember where that is. in the control, it's in the control panel. Might be. Actually, in the control panel, then you have Internet. You might be able to get access to it through there, where you. Double-click on your Internet icon, and then it'll probably have your dial-up, and you might be able to double-click on that and actually dial up your Internet prior to launching your browser.
Oh.
I got a shortcut to my Internet, so I can I can do it before I connect.
Yeah, I would try and do that and see if that helps.
It should help.
Yeah, and if that doesn't cure that... Because you're saying you're having problems with both browsers doing it the other way. I'm pretty inclined to think that that's probably going to solve it, especially since you said your system's about a year old.
Yeah.
There are applications, and it's trying to do something, and nothing's there. So it's really spinning its wheels.
Good luck. Thanks a lot, Ron, for calling. Appreciate it. And Yvonne in Brown Deer, you are next. Hi, Yvonne.
Well, I'm a real problem.
Uh-oh.
I've been listening to the program, and I don't understand one thing that he's... I understand the words, but I don't get the meaning of the process. Okay, I have a Mac, and you said you were doing PCs today?
Well, we can try and
we can try Macs, too.
Yeah?
Okay.
We're double-edged swords here, Larry and I.
my Mac is an eMac. It's 2 years old.
Okay.
And I'm computer stupid now. I was just getting into it when I had a heart attack and a stroke on the same day, and I'm just trying to recover what I did know.
Okay.
So what I'm my problem is the email password disappeared, and the icon for entrance into the Internet, so I do have a substitute for that, but that disappeared. One of my gifted grandchildren has been using the computer a lot, and a lot of things went wrong. During that time, we had it cleaned up, and he was not able to find the Mac or the email thing or the icon.
Hmm. So now your question is, how do you find it?
Yeah.
Okay. Larry, I'm using OS 10.4, and I know if you hit the option symbol and A, you'll go to your applications.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay, on your keyboard,
There's
to the left and right of the space bar.
Yeah.
There's what they call the I believe it's called the options.
We have all the icons lined up.
It's not an open. Is it the Apple symbol?
Yeah.
I do these things and then I forget what they.
Yeah.
But you hit the options key. It's to the left and to the right of your space bar.
Okay.
And then the letter A. So it's we're calling it a shortcut or a hot key. You know, combination of hitting two keys at the same time. So if you hold that key to the left or right of your space bar down. And then the letter A, I believe it takes you to the applications on your system.
Okay.
And then in there, you can click around and see the icons for the application. You know, it'll name the applications and also show you the little pictures for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what you could do is you could just drag it to your desktop to give you access to the application again by an icon shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by a pictured shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the other thing I'm going to try and do is get into a class.
Mm-hmm. But that's solving the problem of the missing icons. The email password for your system. Now, is this access to your system provider or access to the application on your computer? Because they're two different things. I'll give you an example. When I go to install an application on my system, because I'm the primary user, it asks me my password so I can give it permission to install the application. But if I'm going to the internet and using my email to access my email application to access my email that's being delivered over the internet, I'm actually communicating with the application and I'm communicating with the application provider or the service provider of my email. So there are two other uses.
Things, yeah.
The password to getting into my email application and the password to getting access to my email that's being downloaded from the internet, and that's from a provider. So
what I can tell you is that I get mail, I can't send.
You get mail and you can't send. That's a setup problem with your system not being able to communicate with your provider.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is either go to the provider's webpage and look for email support, you know, to find out what you need to have in your system, or you could call them up and have them step you through it to confirm that you have the right settings.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the easier thing for you to do.
Yeah.
But make it clear to them that you're a Mac user because it'll be a little different than a PC.
Yep. Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Yvonne. And
how'd I do, Larry, with the Apple question?
You did pretty good. Jeff and Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, folks. I'm so glad you're having this program today. I was kind of thinking about when you're going to have this program, and it's like divine coming down.
Divine intervention here.
Great. I just got a new computer last week or 2 weeks ago now, and
okay.
It had Windows Vista pre-installed on it. So I have some questions regarding Windows Vista since it's brand new.
Right.
Number one was my scanner software is not compatible.
Okay.
So I was wondering if there's a third-party software somewhere that I can pick up either from the internet or at the store. Number two is what's your suggestion on antivirus software, one that won't slow down the system?
Mm-hmm.
And then any remarks that you have on Windows Vista that I need to know.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start with the last one first. Windows Vista, it presents challenges because if you already have existing hardware and software that you want to use, you really need to make sure that you're compatible with the new version of Windows because if there aren't upgrades or fixes available to let, you know, install it on Vista, then it really won't work. So I'll give you an example. I gave my daughter Vista on her new system, and I thought, okay, I'm going to, and I've told this story before, that, you know, I want to give her wireless access to the internet, and I went to get a new card. And I figured, well, this, you know, had a nice date on it. It wasn't mm-hmm. real old. It was fairly recent, within a couple of weeks after Vista's launch. Well, I went and installed it and wrestled with it, and that didn't work. And then I went to the website, and lo and behold, I couldn't download any fixes from the manufacturer because they weren't ready for it. So I had to take it back to the store, and I looked to see if there were any options for the old wireless card. I figured I'd give her bumper up a notch, and with the mm-hmm. new stuff, now I'm looking at going backwards. Well, the old stuff didn't have any options either, so I actually redid the system in XP because I knew I could get it to work, and
yeah,
and I knew what she needed to use. I had everything for her. So, you know, if you're getting a new system and you're not married to anything, then it's a good fit. Because you're moving forward with newer technology, newer software, and so forth.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
It's much better for us. It's so much faster. Our computer was mm-hmm. 7 years old, so we mm-hmm. needed a new computer so badly. This... The only thing that doesn't work is our scanner, and mm-hmm. I did go all the routes of calling the software
yep.
people, and they mentioned I could use Microsoft Paint and or whatever that's called, mm-hmm. and or Microsoft Word.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering out of curiosity, is there... I had Epson Smart Panel. Now, mm-hmm. can I go buy a CD of that?
And... Well, you have to contact it. Is it an Epson scanner?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should go to Epson's website and you know, see if there's an option for you for an updated driver for the scanner.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or, you know, click on their tech support or support icon and, you know, see if you can email them
and request that. I have done some of that. And uh-huh. I'm just wondering, just out of curiosity, if you knew anything about the scanner stuff. Do you have any other suggestions regarding
You have to realize it's related to the scanner because it is hardware specific.
Uh-huh.
It's really focusing on connecting the scanner to the system
versus... The scanner is connected. It recognizes...
No. I mean, so you're saying the scanner is recognized by the computer?
Yeah, it says Epson 1650 Perfection, and I've actually used it. Actually used it through Microsoft Paint.
Okay.
And it just doesn't have that nice application that I can use to scan to email and copy and all that stuff that I like to do.
Boy, you know, you could probably go and find, since you've got the hardware talking, I thought the hardware was
not.
Okay. You could probably go to, like... download.com, which is part of CNET, CNET.com, and look for probably like an abbreviated version of Photoshop or, you know, something that's similar. You know, they have like these personal versions to work with pictures mm-hmm. and files and stuff.
Yeah.
Also, Google has, Picasso? Is an application that you may want to take a look at downloading.
Okay.
So if you go to google.com.
How do you spell that Picasso?
I think it's PICASSO.
Oh, okay.
I believe that's the way to spell it, but you'll find it on their website. And then as far as the antivirus software, you'll have to check and just make sure that they're Vista compatible, but ones that I've used... Bitdefender seems to work fairly well speed-wise.
Bitdefender?
Yeah, B-I-T.
Defender.
Defender.
Okay.
And
the second one?
Another one that's like a free, what they call it, a free internet project where there are a number of people contributing to it to propagate it and keep it free, is called ClamWin, C-L-A-M-W-I-N.
Okay.
And then if you go to Infostar.com, yeah. click on the Virus Info Center page, and then go to the middle where it says A-V Help.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of links for antivirus programs, and there's one, I think, that even has, like, just the list of all of them that are out there. You just have to kind of pry around.
I'll take a look. Thanks for your help today.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Peter in Delavan will turn to you now. Hi, Pete.
Hello.
Hi.
I've got a small problem.
Okay.
Actually, I have a HP computer, not too old, just not even a year. And I'm visually impaired, and my web pages come up. When they come up, they only fill about two-thirds of the screen with, you know, lots of space on either side. And I'm wondering how to make them larger.
Boy, I'm trying to remember this. There's a keyboard shortcut.
Because I've got internet browsers.
Right.
And it happens the same on both of them. I've got Firefox and, of course, Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that the window itself is taking up two-thirds of the screen, or the page on...
The page is.
Okay. Do you have the font size maximized? You know, you can change the font that the page is using. So do you want
well,
the page...
I increase it, you know, on both of the... you know, browsers, and that helps somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But it moves the text further down the page, and the page is longer. It doesn't get any wider.
Hmm. I know. I've seen it where it proportionally changes the size when you. I'm trying to remember that there's a keyboard shortcut to doing this, and I haven't used it in such a long time, but I know it has to do with using the control key, and it will allow you to dynamically change the size of the browser page, and it's all proportional. So then it becomes a matter of how you want it to look and then navigate, you know, up and down or across.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
If you email me...
Okay.
Can at web1@infostar.com.
Okay.
And just tell me, you know, put in parentheses, looking for, you know, just make it so that your subject can highlight what you're looking for.
Okay.
Because that'll make it easier for me to pull it out of the hundreds of emails that I get.
Yeah, I understand that.
But I remember my sister sent me the hotkey combination because she said, look what I learned since I reached 50 because I need glasses now or something.
Oh, I'm getting there. So
all right.
Maybe it's time for me to learn it too.
Thanks, Pete.
You take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant today. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your personal computer with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And Pete, for Peter in Delavan, who just called, another listener says he should hold down the control key and use the scroll on the mouse to change the size size of the text.
Yeah, yep. That's you know, when that scroll button came out on the mouse, and they figured this would be a neat little thing to add to it. And I remember my sister saying, "Hey, check this out! Now I can see everything." Because you can dynamically change the size of the page very easily, very quickly. I just didn't remember how to do it. I knew it had to do with the control key. I knew that.
So hold down the control key, use the scroll on the mouse to change
but
the size.
But you need the scroll on the mouse.
Yes.
Not all mice are created equal.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Let's go on to Peter in Madison. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Well, I got three questions real fast, I hope. We have AOL, and last year I added their spyware and spam protection, and it seems about that time that all the mail, email that we had, you know, in our inbox that was there just disappeared prior to that date, approximately.
Okay.
Is there any way to recover that you're aware of or somebody I could follow up with?
Hmm.
Or get
you don't, well, AOL is web-based email, so it's all through their system. And there may be, I'm not familiar exactly how it's set up, but sometimes when you change a configuration or a setting on software or a service, then it resets it. So it's like starting the counter over new.
Right.
So that's why your messages might be gone.
Okay, well, we have it installed on the computer. You know, we have the old traditional service.
Mm-hmm.
The mail is on our hard drive. Okay.
You mean the AOL email is on your downloaded to your system?
Yep.
It's not off of their web servers.
That's correct.
Hmm. Well, then there might be a setting that you might have to change so you can get access back to it. Maybe there's, some shutoff or cutoff that they, when you put that spyware on, that it is now, that it's obviously different because you said it was there before and now it's gone.
Right.
So you might have to contact them to find out, how to get back to it.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll do that. Second question is, we have a wireless network here in the house, and three of our computers connect up with it just fine. One of them, through the regular Windows process, finds the network, but it won't connect. All the others connect without any problem, but it finds it, but it won't connect. Do you have there's a password thing, and my daughter says she's got the password in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something else that could be blocking that?
You might have you tried starting over with connecting it?
What do you mean by starting over?
Well, in other words, eliminate the wireless connection and then reconfiguring it to see if, for some reason maybe somebody used it and, made a change in the setting without even realizing it.
In her computer?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
not in the router and not in the other systems, but just the one that's the trouble one.
So restart?
What I would do is you could... you can go into the network and you could remove the, is it a laptop?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just trying to think what the easiest thing to do would be.
Yeah.
You could try and... have the system, there's no problem with the card at all. It's just that it's the connection it's having a problem with.
That's right. She connects with the UW network and all the other networks around.
And those work fine?
Yep.
Boy.
I would think it's just password, but she says it's in there.
Yeah.
Either maybe just go in and wipe out whatever's in there and re-enter it?
Yeah, I would probably try that. If she's having... it's working fine with the other systems. I would leave the card and the settings alone with that, but just try and re-enter the password in the one at home for home.
Okay.
And make sure you don't have the cap locks light on when you're doing that. Sometimes that happens.
Right. Okay. Thank you. The third question is real quick. I hope when I boot up, I get a message. I mean, everything boots up okay, but I get a little, box that says, can't find a certain file. It's got this, a name.
Mm-hmm.
It's a DLL file. And
right.
I hit okay, and then I go into to everything. It continues to boot. Everything works okay. I don't have any problems.
I can tell you how to fix that. If you write down what the DLL file is.
Yes.
When you click on, I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, but if you click on start, click on run. And
right.
Is your system Windows XP?
XP Home.
Okay. And click on Run and then type in MSCONFIG.
Config, okay.
Yep. And then go to the startup icon and look for the checkbox that might have that DLL file in it.
Okay.
Or that looks something like it's close to it, and uncheck it. And then restart your system because it's trying to reference a file in the startup that for whatever reason is no longer there, whether it was spyware or a program that you changed and uninstalled off your system or you know, just something that changed and went away.
Okay.
But the link is still there in the startup folder trying to reference it.
Can I just get that straight through the startup folder?
You could probably find it there, but it's, you know, the easiest way would be click start, then run, then msconfig, and then the startup tab, and okay. then look on the list, and you should be able to find it there.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yep. Thanks, Peter. Glenna in Lyons, I believe you're next. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter. I'm glad I finally get to talk to you. I have had this question for such a long time. I have a Windows XP laptop.
Okay.
And a lot of times when I, most of the time, when I go onto somebody else's web page and I want to print their whatever the information is, the right side is always like missing like about an inch or something like that.
Okay.
And I have a Hewlett-Packard scanner, and I did have an Epson, and it does it for both of them. So I don't know if it's a scanner or if it's the printer, I mean, or the computer.
Well, when you go to print, what I would do is print preview.
Print preview.
Yeah. So, you know, when you pull down the file menu and then it says print or print preview, then you can adjust the settings for how your pages are going to print out. And don't ask me why it's not automatic, like, hey, yeah, I do want it to fit the screen. You know, I do want it to the screen to fit the page. But not all web pages are created equal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they do it just by default, and you have to just play around with the settings.
When I go to adjust settings, what do I look for today?
Because, like I said, they're all different. You might want to change it so it's like maybe 90%. And then it'll shrink it down so it fits on the page. For example, one of the banks that I have to access bank statements for, if I use their default to print it out, I never see the pennies.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to change it to I think I got it down to like maybe 88%, and then it'll print the whole thing for me.
Well, when I went into your website and I printed up that whole information thing that you had, that whole thing came out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So, but other.
But like I said, not all web pages are created equal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yours is pretty good then. Okay, so
thanks.
I'll try that then.
All right. But you can. And which web browser do you use most of the time?
Web browser. You
like
know what?
Internet,
I'm like
Internet Explorer?
I have SBC.
Okay. Well, whether or not you use Internet Explorer, Mozilla, you know, another thing that will change how things are, how they print out is like the caller that asked for help for seeing larger size text. So if you had the scroll mouse, you know, and you held the control key down and then manipulated the size of your font, that will change how much you're seeing as well when you go to print.
Okay.
So
that would,
you know,
hold the control down and then
then the scroll button.
Scroll.
Yeah.
And what is
it's on the mouse.
It's on the mouse. So you hold the control key on your keyboard, and then on the mouse, if you have a scroll button, you can just dynamically change on the fly the size of what you see on your screen.
Oh.
It'll go smaller, bigger, back and forth. It's pretty neat if you've never seen it, but like I said, I used it, I think it's been at least a couple of years ago, and then I really didn't have a reason to use it, so I forgot it.
Oh. Well, mine, I don't have like an actual mouse. I have like the little pad thing that you just move your finger
around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then you, there might be a way to do it, but you'd have to look into, you know, how to simulate having a scroll.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try the adjust settings that might. My son's really good on a computer, and he tried and tried and tried a whole bunch of different things to do it, and he couldn't get it to do that. But I don't think he did what you suggested, so
now,
I'll try that.
Now, here's another part to answer some questions for some other people. Depending upon the browser, and you have to go in and look at the settings, but some people have it where you don't print out like the background graphics or the page the way it looks. So if that is ever the case, sometimes the browser has settings where you can change to print exactly how the page looks.
Mm-hmm.
versus eliminating background graphics or colors because they may interfere with how the page prints.
Oh, okay.
You know, so you don't want all black background because it's using a lot of ink, for example, or you don't want to print out all the pictures, you just want the text. So then you would change settings in the browser so that when you went to print, then it wouldn't use all that excess ink that you didn't want to waste.
Okay.
So that's
right.
That's another option.
Yep. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Madison, Peter Green of InfoStar.
I'm in Madison,
He's from Madison. Peter Green of InfoStar from Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. And you can join in as well as we visit with him here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking personal computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And Pete, you always have a top 10 list for us today of websites, places to go, and you've got another one for us.
Yep. And I'll have to update. I've been trying to update my web pages, but they changed something on me, so look for it in the next day. So you'll have to go off of this list and write them down if you want to know them. Okay, the first, and they'll be at infostar.com, and you'll be able to click current or go to the archives and scroll down to today's date, and you'll find it there in the next day or so. This first one is called storagesearch.com. And so if you want to know about things like the new solid-state disks and why they're going to be better, they are more expensive, but they're definitely more reliable. So that's the new way storage is going to be going over the years. So that's storagesearch.com. The next one we mentioned earlier is Microsoft's view on how we're going to interact with digital content in the future at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to surface.com, that's where that is. This next one is a user-driven social content website. So you can be part of their community and submit information and content, and if it gets popular, you might get viewed by millions of people. It's called dig.com, D-I-G-G.com. This next one is in beta, and it says it's got 91 events, 1,239 authors, 1,437 lectures, and 2,201 videos, and it gives you access to free video lectures from top scientists around the world, and it's called videolectures.net.
Interesting.
And number five is an information resource on Apple products, Macintosh, iPod, news, and so forth, and it's called Macinnn, MACNN.com. And if you're an Adobe user, and they make products for both Apple and for Windows, for example, I had to learn products for both systems, so it was useful to look at some of the forums on their different products, and it's all organized at adobeforums.com. And number seven is called Fixya, F-I-X-Y-A.com, and it's in beta, and it's access to an online knowledge base for consumer electronics support, repair, user manuals, FAQs, troubleshooting information, and they've got I put a link up there so you can browse by manufacturer. So they may not have every manufacturer up there, but you know they're obviously working on trying to make it a very all-inclusive site. This next one, I think it's kind of short for Gizmo, because it's a resource that covers inventions, innovation, and emerging technologies. And it's called Giz Magazine, G-I-Z-M-A-G.com. And number nine, again, another community kind of resource. And hopefully these things will be used in a good way and not in, you know, like a bad-mouthing way or an adverse way. It's called InsiderPages.com. And it helps you locate local businesses and to share your opinion and ask questions in your local community. And number 10 is for people that, you know, the wireless and the cell phone technology constantly changing, you know, Apple releasing their iPhone pay, you know, device. This is called wirelessadvisor.com.
Okay.
So
all those are available on infostar.com.
In about a day.
About a day.
Give it about a day. Okay. I got to contact my website provider and find out how I can update pages to my website.
Well, I'll tell you what. We also got an email over our during the news from Felix, who says, I comment on your response to the caller who was asking about image software mm-hmm. on the program. He said, first, the Google image software is called Picasa, not Picasso. Nope. So it's P-I-C-A-S-A. P-I-C-A-S-A. So you can just go to picasa.google.com. And he's been using, this is the second thing, he's been using the free open source program. It's called GIMP for a while now, G-I-M-P. And he's been quite pleased with it. It's a sort of an open source version of Photoshop.
Okay.
And that's at www.gimp.org.
Well, I might have to put that in the top 10 next month.
Yeah, it might be something to put in there.
Yeah.
Don in Portage. We'll
that's
give
great.
You, yeah, that's great. Thank you very much for that email. And Don in Portage, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. See, I recently installed a new printer on my system. It's working just fine. But what I'm dealing here with is when I go into settings and into my printers, I still have two, I call them ghost icons from the previous printer that's disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And when I right-click on either one of them to delete it, it says it's going to delete, but it never does. And if I drag them both over or one of them over to the recycle bin, it'll say that the printer cannot be removed. You either entered a printer name that was incorrect or the specific printer is no longer connected to the server. And I just wonder if you can help me get rid of those two icons.
Was there software that was used to install the printer?
The new one?
No, the old one. That
yes.
You're having problems.
Yes.
Yeah. You may want to go to the control panel and do an add and remove on the manufacturer's program that came.
Yeah, that's gone.
You so, removed it?
I removed it.
Hmm.
I had a hard time doing it, but it it showed up over there, but it didn't show up taking up any space, but it was listed there,
mm-hmm.
and now it's no longer listed there either.
Okay.
Boy. That doesn't seem to be causing any kind of a problem, except it just bothers me. I know they shouldn't be.
Yeah. I would probably, if you're, so you're having problems removing those icons, I would probably go to try looking at the groups at google.com. And you might have to query it a couple of different ways, but, you know, trouble removing deleted printer icons would be a good one to start with and see if you can find a forum that, you know, has some suggestions about how to do it. Sometimes they talk about making registry changes, and you have to be real careful when you do that. I don't know if you've ever done stuff like that, but on my tips page, I have information about how to back up Windows registry and, you know, just information about how to deal with it.
Yeah, perhaps maybe at my level, and I'll just live with these two on there. It didn't seem to cause any problems.
Yeah, as long as it, you know, if it's not really hurting anything, you're probably not going to see it, especially since you have your new printer set up as a default.
Yeah.
You know, to...
Yeah.
Be your regular
and
printer.
Working real swell. Real
yeah,
good.
Okay. So might want to leave well leave enough alone. That's the other thing.
I hear you talking.
Thanks, Don.
Yep.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Bernie and DePere, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem is my Dell, which is 6 years old, has just slowed down something terribly. I think it's because my hard drive is too full.
Okay.
And I've heard that I should have 25% spare space on my hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to eliminate some like Diablo programs that grandson put on.
Okay.
And I what do they call that when they fill up the blank spaces? It's not configure.
Cache?
It's not compile.
Oh.
It's when the computer goes through and moves everything down to fill up the free spaces. So you got all the free...
disk defragmentation?
Defrag.
Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Defrag. I did that once. But it doesn't seem to really help a lot.
Okay.
Could you go through any other tips you might have?
Sure. Well, one thing I would do is if you go... Are you using Windows... What?
XP.
Okay.
Yes.
If you click on Start, then click on Programs, and then
Start
click
and Programs,
and then click on Accessories.
Okay.
And then System Tools.
Accessories, System Tools.
Yep. Okay. There should be one that says Disk Cleanup.
Disk Cleanup.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you should make sure and do that.
Okay.
Okay. And then after we make all these changes, I've got two more, then you'll want to run the disk defragmentation.
Okay.
Which is in that same area.
Okay.
All right.
Under System Tools?
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll see disk cleanup and also disk defragmentation.
Okay.
So that's the last thing that you want to do after we're done with the next two.
Okay.
The next one is in the same area. So click on Programs, Accessories, System Tools, and then System Restore.
System Restore.
And what you want to do is there's a line that says Change Restore Settings. It's to the lower left side,
okay.
And you can actually click on that. And what you want to do is resize your restore to about 1% of your hard drive.
Okay.
All right. You don't want to make it zero, but you want it about 1%.
1%.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the next thing you want to do is on your desktop, you want to right mouse click on your recycle bin, and you want to click on properties, and you want to change that from 10% down to about 1%.
Down to 1% also.
Yep.
Okay.
Depends on the hard drive size, but usually 1% is pretty safe. Sometimes with newer systems, if you have a really large hard drive, even zero gives you a couple of hundred megabytes of recycle bin, which is just fine.
Okay.
So now you've if it was a 100 gigabyte hard drive, you've recovered approximately 25% of your drive space back just by doing those things that we mentioned.
Fantastic.
Because the operating system sets those aside with those default settings to occupy that space in case it needs it.
Gotcha.
And then run disk defragmentation after that.
Then defrag.
Yep. And then reboot your system twice.
Reboot twice?
Yep.
Okay.
And then once you're done with that, you probably want to go into System Restore and then just create a restore point.
Okay.
Just to be safe so you can get back to that where it was.
I don't
hopefully
know what
you run. Mean. What you do is you click on Start, click on Programs, click on Accessories, click on System Restore, and then it will say, "Do you want to create?" There's one of the options is to create a restore or access point.
Okay.
And then you just click on that and click Next, and then it'll ask you for a description, and you can just, you know, what I usually do is say I made this change and that change and put today's date and my name, you know, just fill in the description and then click OK, and you're basically done within a minute.
Okay.
And that's
right.
It.
Real good. That's
hopefully
fantastic.
That'll work.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks. That's one of those questions I think probably a lot of people.
Yeah,
were
and the other thing is, like
on.
I mentioned earlier, adding memory to an older system with Windows XP, it definitely likes to have 1 gig of memory. So if you have 256 or 512, it'll be a night and day change.
Bump it
to
up.
Just bumping it up. So just look for, try and figure out what kind of memory you need for your system. That Block Advisor that you can download is a good utility to help you. It's not perfect. I've seen it where it says, you know, you have one space open and you really might have three spaces open. So opening up the system, you know, for some people is an option, or you can always take it in. But, you know, look for a sale in memory, and hopefully, you know, you
go
can
from
do
there.
The upgrade.
And on to Judy and Madison. Judy, hello to you.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I came to computers as an older adult, and I have learned so very much from you, Peter. I really appreciate this program.
Thank you.
My current problem is I'm running Windows XP Home Edition is with some of the emails that I'm getting from Outlook Express. I use Firefox, but I guess that doesn't matter with the Outlook Express. I have several attachments that I can't open, and I get a message that says, this file does not have a program associated with it for performing this action. Create an association in the folder options, but it when the little box comes up, it just says file unknown. So I don't have any idea of what I'm supposed to be doing.
Okay. Now, the real important question is, are you expecting these file attachments?
Yes. I don't know if you'd say expecting, but mm-hmm. they're from people that I currently get emails from and trust.
Okay. Well, opening up attachments, what your system is trying to do is it's saying, I'm delivering files to you, but you don't really have an application on your system that recognizes these files or a program that I can associate with that will allow me to open it up so you can take a look or use it. So, for example, if you have a word processing program on your system, whether it's Microsoft Word mm-hmm. or any other word processing file, if that file that was sent to you ended in .doc, it would be recognized because on your system you already have Microsoft Word installed or, you know, a program that recognizes that file. So if you're trying to open up a file that you don't really have a program on your system, then you can't look at it. So for another example would be, let's say someone created a business card for you, and they created the business card in Microsoft Publisher or some other application that created the business card file. It could have been Adobe, a PDF file. If you don't have a program such as Adobe Viewer to look at that file, or Microsoft Publisher Viewer, or the application, you won't be able to see it because your system simply doesn't understand what that file belongs to.
Okay, so there's no way of going to the folder in the control panel
because I don't know
what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, you can do it and associate it with a program, but if it doesn't recognize the file, it still won't change. Because what it'll do is it'll try to open up that file, but if it doesn't understand it, it still won't work.
Okay, so just
so if someone is sending you a file, you need to know what kind of file it is, and then you can say, "Oh, I don't have that. Is there an application that I can download for free to look at it?" So, for example, if you don't have any of Microsoft's Office products. So, for example, someone sends you a PowerPoint presentation. You need to have the PowerPoint viewer to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can't see it.
Yeah, that's not one of the problems. I know the mm-hmm. same thing has happened when I have forwarded some emails, and mm-hmm. even though it hasn't come to me as an attachment, it goes mm-hmm. out as an attachment. And I don't know how to send it the way that it came without it being an attachment. Mm-hmm. And that might be the problem. I'm mm-hmm. not sure.
But if people are sent that you know and trust are sending you files, you need to identify, find out what kind of file, what application does it belong to.
Okay.
And then you need to either get some kind of application viewer that will allow you to, you know, look at those files, you know, after they've been sent to you. That would work with what they've given you.
Sometimes you can email the person back and say, "Can you send it a different mm-hmm. way?"
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. That's
yeah.
Sometimes it's, oh, yeah, I can send it, you know, mm-hmm. a different way, and they do, and then it comes through. Beth in Waukesha, your turn. Hi, Beth.
Hi. We recently got a new computer, and we're dealing with Vista, and I'm beginning to think I really need to take a class in Vista. But one of the problems we're having is with our email. When I try to spell check an email message that I'm sending out, mm-hmm. I get a little pop-up box that says that this language is not recognized by spell check. And I'm wondering if you could help me with that.
The language is not recognized by spell
Something
check.
Something along those lines, right. It almost sounds like, well, if I had typed it out in French or German, then it would be okay. But it doesn't want to check my English.
In the email application, what are you using for email in Vista?
It's Windows email.
So it's the program that came with it.
Windows Mail.
Okay.
Yeah.
So have you looked through the options?
No, I have not yet.
Okay. When you open up the Windows Mail, mm-hmm. you need to pry around under you know, options and settings.
Okay.
And the next part of this is, what are you using for word processing? Are you using Microsoft product?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're using like their new Word version?
Right.
Okay. What you need to do is create the association between the mail or the mail system and the spell checker that's part of the Windows Vista Word program. So that it's sharing the same dictionary.
Oh, okay.
Because what your system is doing is it's saying, I'm going to send out email, but you want me to spell check it, but I don't really know where my spell checker is.
Okay.
So you need to complete the association between them.
I see. Okay.
So the association is in the mail program and not in the Word program. Because the controlling part of this whole thing, the quarterback in this whole game is the mail application needing to be told, you know, where to go find it.
I see.
So you need to look under either options or preferences.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks for calling. Susan and Wausau, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I've got two. First one, when I was working with a person who deals with computers, they had said that I should only have about 33 processes running on my computer.
Okay.
And when I look under the task manager, I see I've got 52.
Okay.
Now, I don't understand all of this to begin with, so can you help me with that, how I would remove processes and know what they are?
Sure. We mentioned it earlier that the easiest way to do this, if you go to infostar.com and click on tips, I think it's number 17, but you might have to scroll through them. It's one that says Windows Startup, and it's got, in the paragraph, it's got numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in parentheses, because it can help you understand what different programs you have starting up in your system. But if you click on Start, then Run, then MS Config, and click on the Start tab, you'll have a whole bunch of checkboxes checked, which are allowing those processes to start up on your system. And like I told one of the previous callers, you should write down what checkboxes are checked and then systematically uncheck them, but you're going to have to restart your computer to see what kind of effect they have on your system. But that's how you get rid of all those different applications running. What happens is when people install programs or when you get a brand new system, all these applications think they need to be there for you all the time.
And they don't.
They don't. And that's why they're sitting there in the lower right-hand corner of your screen waiting for you to start them when you don't really need to.
And Susan, I'm sorry, but we can't get to your second question. Thank you very much for calling. And Peter, thank you so much. You will be back on July 2nd, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably when it's a little hotter than today.
Okay.
Thanks, Larry.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. He'll be back on July 2nd, and we'll do this all over again. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Jack Holseder, who introduces us to Frank Lloyd Wright Works in Lake Geneva, part of the upcoming event, Prairie on the Lakes. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.